previously on Podcasts Without Pretense.
I heart anus.
And the fact of the matter was that 12 wasn't enough, but 13 may be too much.
It's less of a parade and more of just a giant dance party.
Hi, I'm Jonathan Strickland.
I'm Maya Zaktar.
And I'm Eric Sandine.
And together, we're three guys who have a lot of pride in all of you.
That's true, because you're here.
Yes.
And we're used to it.
Yes, we are. Eric, how you been? We haven't seen you around for a bit, buddy.
Yeah, good. Busy. That's about it. I don't know. Well,
the verbose, loquacious Eric at his best, ladies and gentlemen.
It's mainly because I just got in the door because my commute back was like an hour and 45 minutes, which is usually about 35 minutes. So, yeah.
Mine's usually an hour, and mine was an hour.
Yeah. The train wasn't happy with me today, but at least I'm not in New York. So.
Hey, Ayaz, how's New York?
It was fine today. I had to work from home because the super needed to do some work here, and he was supposed to be here at 10 in the morning. He was then supposed to be here at noon, and then 3. And then he showed up at 4, which was great. So, you know, day totally worth hanging around the house. So that was nice.
Well, I mean, there was an experience I had where I was all excited to go into work on Monday morning because I was going to finally – pitch a show idea I have for How Stuff Works, it's actually a suite of programming I have for ongoing show. And I had put together the pitch and I had worked really hard on a pilot episode. And I had been trying to establish a meeting with three other people at our office, all of whom are incredibly busy. So finding a time when everyone was available was quite the challenge. And I used our shared calendars to determine where there might be a half hour of time available for all three of us, and then picked one. And then it turns out that one of said three other people was out of town, but person's calendar did not reflect this status. And so there was no way for me to know that they were not in fact available. So I walked all the way into work on a Monday. Typically, I work from home on Mondays. I walk the 3 miles in, excited to go, and then almost immediately find out that I will not be having that meeting at all. Tried to schedule it for later this week, and then found out today that the earliest I'm going to be able to have that meeting is July 10th. So it's a series of having the rug pulled out from under my feet because it's not reflected in the calendar. If you're going to tell me to use the calendar to book meetings, you got to keep the calendar up to date with your vacations and travel.
I've known that frustration before. Not that particular one, but these shared calendars, like it was in the calendar. Everything's in the calendar to the point where I stopped looking at my calendar, which then I make mistakes constantly because I'm like, oh yeah, I can take that time. Like, oh no, I'm booked. I'm not supposed to do that. So I've been on both ends of that because eventually I stopped trusting the system.
See, I always try to jump on the calendar and put in things like vacation and travel time and stuff right away. So that way I can hold the higher moral ground when someone asks me to do something and I say, listen, it's on my calendar. You see, I can't do it. Yes.
Yeah.
So last week, I got to go on this long bus ride to New Jersey for a company picnic party thing. And my son was with me, as was Liz, because it was Liz's company's party. And he wanted to watch, during the ride, and I'm not kidding about this, he wanted to rewatch Vampire Dog.
Eric, did you ever actually watch Vampire Dog? You know, the movie you picked?
Well, I watched the whole thing. I did.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You picked it. Ayaz picked it. That's right. It's Eric's turn to pick the next one.
Yeah. Unlikely. I picked the family movie, but I got to watch it again, sort of, with captions, and it's still all I can hear is Norm MacDonald's voice in my head, even though he had headphones in, because I still think that Norm MacDonald was amazing in that movie.
One of my first notes was, holy shit, is that Norm MacDonald? This movie just got 100 times better.
I, as a knight, came to the conclusion that while Vampire Dog is not a good movie, it's not a bad movie either, and it's definitely a zillion times more entertaining, legitimately entertaining, than A Talking Cat.
Oh yeah, definitely better than A Talking Cat.
A Talking Cat was entertaining for the wrong reasons, whereas Vampire Dog at least had some charming moments. I actually really liked the villains in Vampire Dog. I think that in a better movie, they would have been easily better served. Like, I think that they were very entertaining. They needed better material to work with.
Yeah, their whole like story was slightly confusing and boring to follow for most of the movie.
Yeah. Yeah, the plot and the lines were
confusing, but yeah, I don't know. It was just boring watching them.
Well, it was too confusing. You're like, there are too many weird plot points going on, because you had the plot of we have to save the school. Then you had the plot of the bad guys who want to get hold of the dog. Then you have the plot of the boy who is trying desperately to be accepted by his new school while simultaneously continuously making an ass of himself. Like, these are three separate plots that on their own could have been the main story of any movie. And instead we get all three.
Should have been three movies, obviously.
I mean, we should have gotten a trilogy of Vampire Dog films.
Yeah.
Where's our trilogy? We were robbed.
I really needed a lot more backstory on Vampire Dog, though. I mean, they really glossed over it.
Yeah. To be honest, I had a lot of questions that the movie failed completely to answer. But I also loved how everything was so convenient that everyone just happened to live in the right place at the right time to see all the details necessary to move the plot forward.
Right.
Essentially, if need be with the plot, if they needed to be like, oh, by the way, we somehow need this unobtainium from Mars. Oh, it happens to be behind this rock. It's like, all right, this is perfect. That didn't happen in the movie. But obviously, it's Vampire Dog, so you could believe that might have happened.
Holy shit. If they make Vampire Dog on Mars, I'm so there.
Oh yeah. I would definitely watch that.
With a bowl of jelly.
Speaking of watching, Eric, you're going to have to pick a movie during some point of this podcast so that we have what we know.
I already kind of did.
Next. Yeah.
I don't know if you guys have watched it yet, but have you watched Death Race 2050?
I have not yet. Have you, IS?
I don't remember. Now I have to look it up.
It's definitely, it's digital video. I mean, I've seen the original Death Race. I've seen that one. The one with Stallone and all that stuff. This one is I remember when they were making this movie, because I was following the development of it while it was happening, but I have not yet watched it. I've been sorely tempted to when it's come up on my Netflix suggested.
It has a 100% on the tomato meter. But it's only been rated by 7 people.
It's Death Race 2050 by Roger Corman? Am I looking at the right thing?
Yeah.
Why is this? This can't be right. Why does it say 2017 in IMDb?
Because it's a remake. It's new, yeah.
So you want us to watch the new one? I got to get this together.
We're not talking about the one that came out in like the late 70s.
Right.
Yeah, then that's just called Death Race. Death Race.
Yeah, it's 50.
Why did you pick this?
Why did you pick Vampire Dog?
You have to give reasons now.
We never justified it before.
I picked Vampire Dog because I wanted to be able to watch this movie anywhere without running into like the old bus problem I used to have, where it's, oh, by the way, what are you watching there on your tablet? Oh, that's not. Oh, there's nudity. Damn it. Okay, I'm not a pervert. No, I swear, I'm not a pervert. And there's reflecting in the window, so it looks terrible.
Your reaction to the nudity kind of meant you're not a pervert.
Well, yeah, but that's the thing. You're not supposed to, like, it's not usually, like, bus-friendly. We used to talk about it in the old days. That's why I wanted to know why. Like, was there a reason where you're like, I really wanted to watch this, and now I have a reason to? Like, I don't mind watching shitty movies, personally. Like, I used to watch a lot of Lifetime movies, and we ran out of them. So that's why I ended up going to Vampire Dog.
God, I was so thankful when we ran out of them.
Those are the best.
Oh, there's still plenty of religious ones if you really want me to pick. But,
Oh, I think I found the one that I'm going to do.
You want to tell us?
Race preview? Because that's one too.
I mean, the one I want to do just based upon the title alone. Zombies. Zombies. Something's very wrong at this zoo. The animals aren't in their cages. Also, they're zombies. Better run or you're food.
Okay, that sounds pretty funny, actually.
Yeah, I'm adding that. Yeah. All right. So that'll be, but that's after Eric's. We can't, you know, jump ahead. Also, next week, I'm going to be in San Francisco. So who knows? Maybe Eric and I will do a show in person next to each other.
Good luck if you can find Eric. He's always on the go. Or stuck on the train.
Pretty easy. Fine. Generally stuck on the train.
Yeah, that's on the go. It's not at home.
It's not necessarily going anywhere. It's
go, yeah.
Stuck on a train that's stationary.
Just kind of sitting at West Oakland.
Yeah, I don't know that I'll be able to meet up with him, but I will be out there next week. So,
yeah. I'll be here. And if they're not on the show, I will just talk for 20 minutes right at camera for the whole time. That's July 5th. Right after Independence Day, that's what I'm going to do, guys. I'm going to mess with you guys. Just stare into your souls.
I did say camera. So our listeners don't necessarily know this, but I did say to Eric that if he really wanted to torture us, he could have picked Transformers 5 and we all would have had to go to the theater to see it.
See, that's not fair at all because that would cost us money. All right, it's one thing. I know we're paying for Netflix. Sure. But one movie, one shitty movie out of that is not so bad. But paying like a full fare ticket to watch Transformers 5, maybe it's cheap in Atlanta, so like it's not that big a deal. But that's an expensive-ass movie. And I think it's got, 16% rating on Rotten Tomatoes?
Well, let me tell you how them picture shows work down here in the South. See, sometimes you even will strap on a shoe to the bottom of your bare feet before you head on out to them picture shows. And occasionally you can pay upwards of $2.25 in order to get yourself in there. But don't worry, they do serve lovely, wonderful foods. Like they got cracklings. And they got themselves some Goobers and RC Coca-Cola. And then you can have yourself a moon pie then. Boiled peanuts. Yeah, we got some boiled peanuts.
Right in the theater.
Jesus Christ, Ice. We're not living in the Stone Age here in Atlanta. It is.
I'm expecting it's going to cost less money for your ticket than mine.
Depending upon the theater, if I'm going to see it in 3D, we're talking about around $18-$20 a ticket.
Okay. A child's 3D ticket today, I had to buy one for my kid, was $21. That's the child's one. So unless I get like severely discounted tickets, which I can get every now and then, I do not want to pay $25 to see the Transformers in any which way.
Yeah. Transformers 5, The Last Night. I mean, come on.
Yes, The Last Night with Optimus Prime losing his mind, apparently.
Only for apparently 3 minutes of the movie. He's apparently a bad guy for about 3 minutes.
Because he's in the movie for literally about five, from what I hear. So
yeah. Well, that's still more than that last one. Where.
Well, the point, though, is that... Go ahead, Eric.
Go ahead. One of my friends went to see it. And I asked him almost immediately. He was like, oh, yeah, I went to go see Transformers 5. My first question was why. And then he's like, well, I went and saw it in 3D. Other question, why would you pay more money? And one of his critiques was, yeah, they kind of left out one of the best things of the Transformers was when they actually transform from things into other things. And he's like, it was a horrible movie, but actually it would have been better if I'd just seen one thing transform.
Right. So the title alone is misleading since nothing transforms into anything else.
Right.
Yeah, I don't. That's a bummer. I think the reason why I think it would have been worth the investment is that we would have gotten a really good episode, or at least a very entertaining litany of cursing out of it. But however, I am not willing to be the one to jump in front of that train and say, let's watch that. That's not going to be my choice. I was That's really why I was hoping Eric would choose it, because ultimately it would be his fault.
No. I don't want to spend that money.
Haven't we? We've watched previous Transformers movies for this show.
We watched Dark Side of the Moon.
Yeah.
We watched the third one.
And that was exceptionally stupid. So
it was. We all agreed that by the end of it, if you take budget and marketing budget into account, it was the worst. It was the most expensive. It was the biggest disparity between the amount of money spent and the quality of the film that we have in the entire history of Podcasts Without Pretense. We have watched worse movies than the third Transformers movie, but they'd cost a fraction of what Transformers cost. So if you look at just the amount of money spent versus the quality of the film, Transformers is the worst by that criteria, by a long shot. Ghosts of Sherwood Forest is a fucking masterpiece if you use those same criteria.
That movie is so unintentionally funny still.
Yeah.
But
This is like a solid 20 less.
I still like to show Ghost of Sherwood Forest to people so that they can really understand what I mean when I talk about being a socialist. And I see that they don't really understand what I mean. I'm like, here, just watch this 17 minute long conversation from Ghost of Sherwood. And if you have any questions, feel free to ask me afterward. And they often have questions like,
what is the context of that? And you go, well, there really wasn't in the film.
Right. I'm like, well, you see, there was a transformation potion that no one needed to take because no one knew what anyone else looked like already. So there was no need to transform in the first place. But don't mind that.
So that means Ghost of Sherwood Forest has more transforming than Transformers 5.
Yes, it's true.
Yes.
I love the idea of going someplace you have never been before and donning a disguise so you won't be recognized, despite the fact that no one there has ever seen you anyway.
That movie, now looking back on it much more fondly, although I remember it being pretty bad. I have clips from that movie sitting around somewhere because it was such an amazingly strange movie.
It did have that really unfortunate sequence where Friar Tuck frames an innocent merchant simply because he's a foreigner in order to create a distraction. Yeah. He keeps on yelling at the foreign vendor for not selling him carrots, even though the vendor explains repeatedly that he doesn't sell carrots.
Anyway, so we don't have to watch Transformers 5 unless somebody loses their mind. And the next person who picks a movie after Eric is Jonathan, and Jonathan has chosen something else. But he can change his mind. He's going to send us to the theater.
Unless it gets to a point where after next week's episode, the movie has already shifted to discount theaters.
Next Wednesday, you and Eric sneak into the movies, either as one person under a giant coat, as a very tall man, or you catch a matinee, and then I will have to watch it too, and then just be very angry at the both of you.
What we do is we just each buy a ticket to some other movie that deserves our money more, and then sneak into the Transformers.
Can't you the ticket, sir? What are you doing in this theater? This is for Wonder Woman.
You could have gone to see a legitimately entertaining movie, and instead you're wasting it to come see Transformers?
This isn't even after the time of the ticket. This is the same time. You should be in the other theater. You'd be yelled at by an usher, a little like 15-year-old losing their mind.
It depends. If you go after the initial opening weekend, no one's checking tickets once you get past the entrance of the main theater.
I'll go to the non-reserved seats theater somewhere else.
That's true. I do only tend to go to the reserved seats theater because I hate having to play the game of, well, we have to show up 40 minutes early so we can get decent seats where we're not having to crane our necks directly backward in order to look up at the noses of everyone on the screen. But that also means we have to sit through all the bullshit commercials before we even get to the other bullshit 40 minutes of trailers before we get to the actual movie. Having the reserve seat is amazing.
the Alamo Draft House in San Francisco. That would be fun. Yeah.
How is the Alamo Draft House over there? I haven't been to, I've only been to a couple, and they both were in Austin.
I went to the one in Brooklyn. Yeah, I go there frequently. That's how I saw Cars 3. Son went and watched Cars 3, and Liz is like, hey, look, if we're going to go see this movie, we should probably have beer with this. And I said, yeah, you're right.
How was Cars 3?
Cars 3 was better than Cars 2, maybe on the same footing, if not a little bit better than the original Cars.
Okay.
They really came a long way with the photorealism when it comes to all the scenery. If you saw The Good Dinosaur, you saw a lot of this hyper-realistic computer imagery. And you have that in this film where when they pull back and the cars are doing whatever they're doing, it looks like it's legitimately shot in the real world. It's very, very impressive. The plot's pretty much Rocky 4 and Rocky 5 combined. Gotcha. Lightning is Rocky. Nice. Shock and surprise. And obviously, I had a huge issue with the whole how does this world exactly work part. But the story is pretty straightforward and simple. So it's a lot better than Cars 2. I think it redeemed that whole thing, because Cars 2 was just this clusterfuck of a movie. I was like, what's the word? Movie's not the right word, but movie is what it is.
You know, it was obviously a spoof and a send up of spy movies, but the problem was it involved lots of characters dying on screen, and I had a big problem with that because, in my experience, the people who identify the most, who love that Cars movie the most, tend to be little kids, and then you have these little kids who have this lovely story. Not that little kids can't handle a movie that's got death in it, but it's just such a switcheroo. Right from the first film, where there's no physical danger really to any of the characters. People, the characters end up suffering like little injuries that obviously nag at them, but there's no one who suffers some sort of calamitous event, and certainly no one who dies in that first film. And then you get to Cars 2, and characters, like little minor characters, are getting killed left and right in it. And I was like, this seems really off tone to me compared to the first film. And it also was a big mess. I mean, it's just a ridiculous world trotting kind of monstrosity. So I'm glad to hear the third one's better. I don't know. There's still some movies in Disney. Like, I used to try and catch all of them, but there's several that I have yet to see. Like, I haven't seen Finding Dory yet, even though it's on Netflix. I haven't watched it.
That was pretty good.
Yeah.
And I really liked Finding Nemo. That's one of my favorite Pixar films. Like, Finding Nemo is probably at least in the top three, if not my favorite. So I should really get around to watching it. I just haven't yet. I did finally see Moana, which isn't a Pixar film, but it's a Disney movie.
And I really have no interest in that film.
It's good.
Why
it actually is very entertaining.
I watched it. Yeah.
It's entertaining. It's a good film. It's cute. It's got a nice message. It features a determined and strong female protagonist, and it's got some fun songs in it written by Lin-Manuel Miranda. And one of the songs is, there's a villain who really only factors into one scene. So he's not much of a villain, but he's a giant crab who sings like David Bowie. And that's why I loved it.
That's all it takes.
I mean, it was a David Bowie style song in a Disney film. That went a long way for me.
Yeah.
But it's actually a really entertaining film. It's, you know, is it one of Disney's strongest? No, but I would say, you know, it's better than like Pocahontas or Hunchback was. It's not as good as something like Aladdin or Beauty and the Beast. Or even Tangled, really. I think Tangled is a better movie than Moana. But I enjoyed the music, and I enjoyed the animation is gorgeous. It's amazing animation.
Did anybody see the live Beauty and the Beast?
I almost watched that on my flight over from Atlanta to Los Angeles, but instead I chose to watch I watched most of Split. And I watched Logan. Those were the two I watched. I watched Logan first, then I watched Split, but we landed before I got to the very end of Split. And I'm like, well, shit, now I got to look this up. It's an M. Night Shyamalan movie.
Well, the other thing is you couldn't be much further, I think, from the genre. You're like Beauty and the Beast?
Yeah.
Or Logan?
Well, I mean, Logan. It was all these were all movies that I had not seen yet. But then I was like, okay. Well, I could watch the live action Beauty and the, like, I have reasons to want to watch both of them. They're obviously very different genres. But here's the thing. I'm a complicated man. I like Disney cartoons and really gritty comic book movie films. So, but I decided to watch Logan mainly because at the end of the day, I've seen Beauty and the cartoon version of Beauty and the Beast. I know that there are differences with the live action version, but I don't think they're significant enough for it to be like, I have got to see this.
I actually saw Beauty and the Beast, the animated version, for the first time about 4 weeks ago. Because I'd never bothered to see it because I had really no reason to. Liz wanted me to watch it because she had just seen the live action one. She's like, I really want you to watch it. So I did. And I thought it was pretty good. I don't quite understand the timeline of the Beast. Like, this lady shows up and she's all like, you got to be nice to me. He's like, fuck off, lady. And like, he's like, if the aging is right, he's about 10 years old when he says to screw off, and she curses him forever until he's like 20 something. I think he's got to find true love. He's got a very small window here when it comes to the requirements. It's
just, he essentially has a decade. I think he's supposed to be 11 at the beginning. And then when he turns 21, that's when, if he hasn't found love by then, it's all over. To be fair, if you're going by Disney rules, if you hit 21 and you haven't found true love, dude, you might as well just pack it in and join the old folks home.
Yeah. And the other thing with this really long, extremely long song introducing Belle, it's like 7 minutes long or 8 minutes. I don't know if it really is 7 or 8 minutes. It's so goddamn long. It's so unnecessary. It's like, we know who you are.
Oh my God. Oh my God, Ayaz. This is why we had to do Podcasts Without Pretense in the first place, because you can't dedicate more than 7 minutes time to enjoy a well-crafted song, which gives you all the information you need about the main character and the situation she's in.
It doesn't need 7 minutes.
Not needing it. It's a wonderful song. It's well-crafted.
I never said it was a bad song.
Dialogue explaining that, it would have been way more boring.
There's a happy medium here, okay? That's what I'm saying. You didn't have to go 7. You could have gone 5. But it seems like this thing, like, wore out its welcome as I'm watching. I'm like, how much longer? She's going from, like, place to place to place to place. I'm like, just get it over with. I get it. You read, and that's weird. Okay?
All I can imagine is going to a theater, sitting next to Ayaz, maybe watching, we're watching Evita. For some reason, and I was just sitting next to me, and then he just stands up in the first 15 minutes and just screams, why are you fucking singing everything?
Now, wait a second now. I no longer have an issue with musicals as a genre. Like, I get why they sing, but I can still get tired of the singing, okay? If a song goes on too long by one of my favorite bands, and it's like, why is this a 12-minute song? Like, maybe I can just go, I think at 8.5, you could have stopped.
How do you feel about Meatloaf, the song, the singer, not the food?
I like the food better than the artist.
Oh, you fucking asshole! Well, Paradise by the Dashboard Light. Paradise by the Dashboard Light. Masterpiece. I know,
like, two Meatloaf songs, and that's like from the like new stuff. So that's
about so you don't know Paradise by the Dashboard Light?
I don't believe I do. So I'm not saying.
Oh, it's so good.
Also, how do you only know Meatloaf's new stuff?
I would do anything for love, but I wouldn't do that. So he's talking about Bat Out of Hell 2. That's what's new to him. The music that came out in the 1990s.
Right. Meatloaf's been around for a long time. It's not like that was like his back. And I was like, okay, who's this guy? And the song wouldn't stop playing. And I'm just like, okay.
I would do anything for love, but I won't do that. I mean, obviously, the radio edit is still like 7 minutes shorter than the album edit. The album edit is insanely long, and I love every goddamn moment of it because I love it because of its excess. It's reveling in its excess. To be fair, the guy who wrote that, Steinman, I believe his name is, that's the kind of music he writes. He just writes this overblown, melodramatic, super long songs. He wrote Total Eclipse of the Heart. That's one of his. And you could totally tell. Like, you listen to Total Eclipse of the Heart, and you're like, oh, yeah, it's got that same melodramatic sound. Or Celine Dion's,
My Heart Will Go On?
No, not My Heart Will Go On. The other big, long one that went on forever and ever and ever. Meatloaf actually finally covered it. It's All Coming Back to Me Now. It's All Coming Back to Me Now is an incredibly long melodramatic song written by the same guy. I Need a Hero was co-written by him. I mean, like, there are all these songs, if you listen to them, you're like, they all are these ridiculous melodramatic story songs. It might as well be like ripped from Phantom of the Opera, because that's how ridiculous and overblown and melodramatic they are. And I have unironic love for probably 70% of them. The other 30% are too much even for me.
You are free to love such things, and I am free to dislike such things.
I got it. I just, to me, when you sit there and say like that first song is too long, it defies my belief, because I really like Beauty and the Beast a lot. It's not my favorite of all of the Disney movies, but it was also crafted by Ashman and Menken, who were the team behind Little Shop of Horrors, which is one of my favorite musicals of all time. And you can tell, because if you listen to the music of Little Mermaid, you can recognize an awful lot of little aspects that popped up in Little Shop of Horrors. I still say the song Part of Your World and the song Somewhere That's Green are practically the same song.
I saw this thing on Broadway. It's called Aladdin. If you can see it,
How was it?
It was really good. It was one of the last performances of the guy who was playing Genie, the guy who won the Tonys for it.
Oh, yeah, the guy who'd been in every production since they first opened on Broadway, yeah.
Yeah, so he was in a bit part on Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. Do you guys watch that show?
Yeah.
He was Titus's rival.
Right, he was the other guy who was going out for the part at... what was the show they were trying out for? It was like one where... Oh, Spider-Man. It was Spider-Man.
They were Spider-Man.
Because they had to get in the harnesses.
Well, okay, so first things first. Titus actually apparently originated the role of Sebastian in Little Mermaid, the musical.
Uh-huh.
Didn't know that.
Yep.
Had no idea about this. And I didn't know that this guy, the guy playing the genie, was the genie when I watched Kimmy Schmidt. And so when we saw him on stage, and this guy was so full of energy, he was, I mean, the Robin Williams standard of frenetic energy, this guy had it. He was excellent, and he was keeping up and dancing and moving and just was hilarious. It was surprisingly good. There were some new original songs that kind of make the show longer, and those weren't as good as the classics, I would think, but that could be because you're kind of biased towards some of them. But it was pretty good.
They also took songs. So Aladdin is one of those movies that changed dramatically from the first draft to what was finally produced when it was. So the movie you see is very different from the movie that was originally conceived. So one of the songs, at least, that was used in the musical is called High Adventure. It's where Aladdin and his friends are singing about going off to rescue the princess, I think. But it's this whole song that about getting together and riding off and being brave. And it's this very fast-paced song. That was actually written originally for the first version of Aladdin, because the movie originally had Aladdin with his three friends, Babcock, Omar, and Kasim. They were they were in the original draft, but that got changed later on, and they were written out.
To a monkey.
Yeah. Yeah, essentially you got Apu instead. So,
I didn't know about that at all. And so when I'm watching the musical, and I'm like, they replaced the monkey with three guys. Okay, it's a little weird. But knowing this now, this is good to know, because it seems 100%. It seems like that monkey was a really, apparently really important, that they had to split him up into three people.
The only reason I know this at all is because when I was a kid, we got this special collection of Ashman Minkin music from Disney that included demos of a lot of the songs. So you got to hear demos of how the songs were and how they evolved over time. And the one for Aladdin included a bunch of songs that were written for the original movie, but of course never were used. So there was also Aladdin's mother sings Proud of Your Boy. And mm-hmm. of course there was no Aladdin's mother in the version that made it to the film, but that was in that earlier draft too. So oh, okay. there were, so, but now the versions that I heard were all demo versions. So it was actually Ashman and Menken singing all the different parts together. It wasn't like a fully cast score or soundtrack or anything like that. But it is neat. When I found out, like, I've never seen the Broadway version. I heard the soundtrack, and when I heard it, I was like, holy shit, they took that song that was originally written for the movie but never made it into the film version, and they were able to use it again. There were a couple songs that they never did use that originated in the movie treatment. One of them was a song by the Three Friends. They're singing it to Aladdin. It's called How Quick They Forget, and it's a barbershop quartet song, but it sounds terrible because there's only three of them. That's the whole point of the song, is that Aladdin has left them. And so it's a song that's throwing shade on Aladdin, and it's all, there's no melody. It's all harmony lines, because Aladdin would be the one who would normally sing the melody line. And I'm like, what a brilliant joke. But you know, it never, again, never got used.
Yeah, the guy playing Aladdin sounded so much like the movie version. It was just kind of shocking. But the actress playing Jasmine had this very odd nasally voice, and when she would hit certain notes. And so we were checking the playbill. We're like, is she maybe she's the understudy? Because maybe we had the wrong time or something, or she was sick or whatever. It's like, no, she's the starring Jasmine. And she just had this really bizarre nasal pitch. And Liz and I are about like third row back from the stage, and we're trying not to laugh because it's just so strange when she hits these notes. And we're like looking at each other, we're like grabbing each other's hands, and we're laughing silently and trying not to make a damn noise, because I don't, you know, as much as I dislike certain things, I don't want to be that person in the theater going, okay, you're terrible, because I can't do that. There was just a bizarre tone. It was just so weird. But we didn't laugh, and everything was fine. Finished the show. It was really fun. And we got this commemorative cup, like I said.
Well, that's cool. Sweet. I'm glad you had a chance to see that. I would have enjoyed getting a chance to see that too. So I need to get out and the next theater piece I plan on seeing is a spoof of Conan the Barbarian called K-Ron the Barbarian. And it's a spoof of barbarian movies, but Karen Cassidy, who's a local actress, is playing the main character. And that alone is a joke, because Karen is about 4'2", and she's going to play the part of a barbarian character who has to save the world. And I can't wait to see this, because Karen is like, she's a really good physical comedian. So not only is she funny, but she knows how to make, like, she knows how to make movements and use her body in ways to make jokes bigger. So seeing like a tiny little 4'2" lady doing these ridiculous physical comedy routines is phenomenal. So I'm looking forward to seeing that. Yeah. But I don't have plans of seeing anything else.
Hamilton is in 2 weeks. So that's exciting.
Do you have tickets?
Yeah.
That's awesome, dude. That's going to be great.
You post for like half a day to get them.
Yeah, I still haven't seen it. I've listened to the soundtrack backwards and forwards. I love the soundtrack, but I have not had the opportunity to see it.
I've done neither. I've not, actually, I guess none of those things. I haven't stood in line for half a day. I haven't heard the music at all. Other than, I think, one song that was like on a late night show, and not backwards or forwards.
I am genuinely impressed by it. I was not prepared to like it. I was actually kind of thinking that I would immediately find it tiresome, but I was completely wrong.
The first time I got all the way through, I was like, well, that was amazing. I'm not crying. Yeah. You're crying.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. So, you know, I had my birthday the other day, and for my birthday, me and some friends got together, and we went to karaoke, and just out of curiosity, I searched to see if they had any Hamilton, because the last time we had been, they had two songs from the show, neither of which I really wanted to sing. But when I did a search, I found that they had You'll Be Back, which is the song King George sings to America. Yeah. It's a breakup love song.
I love
that. Yeah. So that was the first song I sang at karaoke, was You'll Be Back from Hamilton. Yeah, it's. I think you would find it intriguing if you gave it a listen. I don't know if you would like love it, but I think that you would find it really interesting. The rhymes are very entertaining. Lin-Manuel is very good at writing thoughtful and provocative lyrics. So if you ever get a chance, give it a listen. I mean, it's on like pretty much every streaming service. So
yeah.
Every now and then I'll look up on like SeatGeek or whatever to see, their tickets are available. And their tickets are available. And they start in New York City. Yeah. They start, and I love it, it's starting at $875. I'm like, wait.
I really wish that there would be a serious crackdown on ticket resellers, because it prevents more people from actually having a chance to enjoy the theater. It's making theater into a ridiculous exclusivity club. And it's unfortunate, because if you make theater inaccessible, then people don't have the opportunity to see where the value of theater is. And then you don't have support for the arts. And then there's no funding for the arts. And it's all because largely because you've got this ticket gouging practice in place, where only people who are shitting gold can afford to go to a fucking show.
So when they opened the ticket sales in San Francisco, basically the reason it took so long, so I got in line at like, I don't know, 4 o'clock in the morning or something like that. And when I walked down the street, there were people that had been there obviously all night, you know, and I was like, all right, whatever. But the reason it took so long in the beginning, and they sold out of like all the $150 seats almost immediately. But what was taking so much time was there were a bunch of ticket resellers who basically paid people to stand in line. Sure. Figured that was going to happen. But what they didn't know when they got to the front of the line was that they needed a physical address for any tickets they bought. So basically all these people were standing there calling these resellers all over around the U.S. trying to get a physical address to send the tickets to, because none of them had them. Yeah, it was horrible. It took forever.
Yeah. I really think there needs to be a serious move on the part. I mean, and it behooves the theater industry to do this.
Yeah, the theater doesn't make any more money. So.
Right, exactly. They only make it from that initial ticket sale. Like, right. It doesn't make any sense to play into that game. Make hard limits to how many tickets you can buy under specific names with specific criteria for any given show. Like, if you want to buy two tickets to every fucking performance, sure. But if you want to buy 60 tickets to one performance, no. And just to give people the opportunity to actually see a show based upon what the theater has valued the seats at. If that's still too much, that's fine, right? Like, if I go and I see that I can buy two tickets to Hamilton and both of the seats are $72, and that's because that's what the theater has decided. It's not a reseller. And I'm like, oh, $72 a ticket, that's still too much. That's fine. To me, I have made a judgment saying that amount of money is not worth the experience I would have. But then when I encounter this thing where it, first of all, it's creating a false scarcity. And second of all, it's inflating the price without having any benefit to the artists or the venue that actually is responsible for it. Fuck that. I don't want some asshole reseller making a fucking sweet ass profit for doing nothing other than gaming the system. It's such bullshit. I feel the same way about concerts, but that's a totally different discussion. Like, whenever I see the convenience fee, I think, well, who the fuck is convenienced by this? I've seen convenience fees that, exactly, it's very convenient for them. I've seen convenience fees that were literally 50% of the ticket price. So you're spending 50% on I wanted to get tickets to see, there's a band called Metric, and they were coming to Atlanta, and it's a Canadian band, so they don't get down here at all, really. So I was like, oh, here's a chance for me to see Metric. I like their songs. I think that'd be fun to see personally. So I went to buy tickets, and normally I would just go to the venue, which is the best way to do it because you can avoid all those fucking ridiculous handling and processing fees that I don't understand what they're handling or processing. So I go to order a ticket, and the tickets are $40. I'm like, all right, well, $40, there's two bands. I'm willing to do that for a band that doesn't get down here that often. But then the convenience fee was $20. I'm like, nope, I'm out. I am not spending 50% of the ticket price on a convenience fee.
Yeah, I was going to go see, I don't remember. They Might Be Giants, like 2 months ago. And it was like $40. And I was like, yeah, $40 sounds like a good price. And then with all the fees on it, it turned out being like $70. And I was like, that no, sucks. $70 is too much.
Yeah. And They Might Be Giants puts on a really good live show. Yeah. I've seen They Might Be Giants play like a dozen times, but I've been lucky because the venue they play here in Atlanta, it's within walking distance of my house. So I can actually walk to that theater and buy tickets there and then come back. So I haven't had to deal with that problem for They Might Be Giants. But yeah, that sucks, man, because they put on a great show.
Yeah. I saw Nick Cave in the Bad Seeds last week.
Oh, wow. How was that?
It was a great show. He's awesome. He played with Cat Power. Cat Power was okay when she opened, but Nick Cave was amazing. I'd definitely go see him again.
Wow. A lot of fun. I've never seen him live. His music is weird. Like it's one of those things where I enjoy it, but then I can never be sure if he's kind of doing stuff tongue in cheek or if he's totally sincere, because if he's totally sincere, the music's too goddamn goofy.
Right.
It's like so dark and brooding as to be almost like a joke of itself. And I'm like, well, if he's in on the joke.
Yeah. It's funny because it's one of those shows I wouldn't have bought tickets for myself. But Liz saw it and bought me tickets, I think, like last Christmas or something. And I was like, huh, all right. Like, I wouldn't have bought those, but then we ended up going. And it was at the Greek in Berkeley, which is this giant outdoor, like, Greek theater. So it was pretty awesome. It was amazing. I'd go see it.
Are there any bands that you wouldn't necessarily think about buying tickets to see, but if someone gave you tickets to go see them, you'd be like, oh, wow, that's actually pretty cool.
Yeah,
Royal
Blood.
I don't know if I wouldn't probably go out to find them, but like I've been listening to a lot of their stuff lately. I also know they're touring soon with Queens of the Stone Age, so like I wouldn't go to see just them. Queens of the Stone Age, I'd go to see, but yeah, Royal Blood, I wouldn't mind going to a concert for them because I only know a handful of their songs, so I would probably want to listen to a lot more. So I'm not just like play the three songs I know.
That's kind of how I felt about Nick Cave, because I like basically I know like Nick Murder Ballads and I know a random selection of other songs.
Red Right Hand.
Right, like yeah, I'm like
I've seen
I enjoy
Scream. I know what Red Right Hand is.
Was that? But the show itself was great, and like it was good enough that I went back and I was like, okay, now I'll listen to his other albums because that was enjoyable.
That's cool. Yeah, I'm a casual fan of Nick Cave. That would probably be one of the shows I would go see. Like, I wouldn't necessarily have sought out tickets. Go-Go Bordello, probably another one. I love their music, but I've just never bothered to try to get tickets to them. Yeah, I might. I mean, I would have to know about it early enough, because Atlanta's the kind of town where if people got word that they were coming into town, those tickets would be swept up in a heartbeat. Because
Beirut.
This
actually happened before. I didn't buy tickets to it, but one of my friends was going to see Beirut and had an extra ticket. I was like, oh yeah, I'll go see that. And this was while I was in Albuquerque, and of course they're from Santa Fe, I think. And yeah, we ended up seeing them, and that was a great show. We went back to one of my friend's house that night, and they showed up because apparently they were staying with her and we didn't even know that. So we got to hang out with them all. Yeah. So
that's kind of cool. Bigger
fan after hanging out with them after the show. But yeah, but that was
So last year, late last year, Becca and I went and saw four bands play. I think I might have even mentioned this on the podcast. I probably did at the time, where we were the band I was most interested in seeing out of the group was Nathaniel Rateliff and the Night Sweats. They were playing, and they do the song "SOB, Son of a Bitch, Give Me a Drink." So they do this kind of Chicago rhythm and blues sort of sound, like a little bit big band, a little bit rhythm and blues, and I really dig it. I love that sound. So I was like, I'm really excited to see them. One of the other bands playing was the Congos, which I was kind of excited to see because I like the song Come With Me Now. It's the only one I was familiar with at the time. And then there was a band called the Struts, which is this British band that has a lead singer who kind of sounds like Freddie Mercury and kind of sounds like David Bowie and struts around on stage like Mick Jagger. And I was familiar with two of the songs that they did because they already had some airplay, and I dug the songs, but I didn't really like have any anticipation about the band. They were the second band to go on, and they were beyond amazing. Like, they easily stole the show that night. Nathaniel Rateliff and the Night Sweats did a fantastic job too, but the Struts ran away with it. And we were such big fans that while I was working the Renaissance Festival, Becca actually went and flew to Delaware to see one of their other shows, and they're playing like mid-sized venues. They're playing with other bands. Like, it's not like they've got a dedicated tour where they're headlining. They're playing other like festival type stuff. So, you know, I said we were going to go to San Francisco next week. Well, we're starting by going to Seattle over the weekend so we can go see the Struts in their final US appearance before they head to Japan for the next part of their tour. So we're going to go see the Struts play this weekend. And if you get a chance, I highly recommend catching them live because they have stage presence, right? Like, it's not just that their music is fun, because it is. It's not just that they're good, they are, but they also put on a great show. And I've seen bands that are, they sound great, but ultimately at the end of the night, you're like, I feel like I could have gotten pretty much the same experience just by staying home and listening to the album. Like, they didn't add anything to it. Struts are not that way, man. It's the other way around. You're like, these guys, if they're able to come out with an album as good as the one that is currently out, if they're able to come up with a great follow-up album, they'll be playing stadiums in no time. They just don't have enough music right now. They essentially played their entire album when we saw them, and it was great. All the songs were fun, but they didn't have anything like they don't have a big enough discography to really justify being a huge name yet. But I if they're able to keep up the way they've been going, I anticipate them to be huge in a couple of years.
Okay, with
so
that,
well worth seeing.
I think it's time to look to the future. You guys good with that?
Sure.
Yeah.
Next time on Podcast Without Pretense.
Guys, I don't heart anus anymore.
So I came home, and then I saw paper everywhere. It turns out my dog had eaten my 23-year-old copy of Batman, the animated series collected edition. Not good.
Yeah, speaking of tickets that you wouldn't buy yourself, but would be happy if other people got them. Long story short, she didn't enjoy the Slayer show. Oh, well.